Yo.
Hey, I'm Emily Chenevere, CEO of the Austin Board of Realtors. Real estate is changing. Disruptors are flipping the script before most of us have even had our morning coffee. So we're taking it to the experts to peel back the layers on what you need to know. Scratch what you think you know about this business and listen up for a new version of an old industry. The best laid plans, right? You can set out strategy and maintain a vision for your business future, but it's all gobbledygook if you don't apply the plans to your business in a meaningful way. I took some time at a recent conference to hang out with Clint Scutcheon, Vice President of the Association and MLS Consulting Services at T360 Consulting. He facilitates strategic planning for associations and MLSs all over the country, and we started with what trends he's seeing right now.
Well, I think one of the good things that I'm seeing in terms of trends is people are actually starting to acknowledge the fact, especially those associations that run MLSs, that they are two separate entities.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, when we're going to approach our strategic thinking and ultimately if we're going to write down a plan, we should start to think about them as two separate entities so that they can kind of stand on their own and focus in on which each has in terms of its strong suits. So yeah,
right.
Starting to see some of that. And it, you know, I'm working with like you all in Austin, high level folks. So I think we're starting to see far more progressive strategic plans. When NAR changed a few years ago and started mandating that people had strategic plans, they're kind of like, a lot of associations are like dragging their feet, don't want to do this. They're just, you know, they just sit on shelves anyway, so who cares?
Yeah, which is terrifying, by the way.
It is, and it happens a lot. But there are some good folks out there doing good work that are ensuring that strategic plans are actually being utilized. And now we're 3-4 years down the road of people seeing the difference that having a real solid strategic plan can lead to actual outcomes and improvement, incremental improvement over time. So I think people are now 3-4 years later past the idea of baseline elements in their strategic plan. Now they're starting to look at progressive, bigger ideas, bigger concepts.
What feels progressive right now?
Well, it's almost regressive that we're talking about this, but the idea of the ethics and the professionalism, right?
Yeah.
That's like why
that
NAR
is the nut
started,
that
right?
Everybody wants to crack. No
yeah.
Doubt.
And so, you know, working with some folks like just was recently in Huntsville, Alabama. They do a great job there. They've got an awesome MLS, but they run that as a separate entity, and they're very consumer-focused as well as member-focused there. And so we're looking at some ideas of going beyond the ethics requirements of NAR. And I know there's a PAG that's kind of talking about at the NAR level, but they're saying, why sit around and wait for NAR to make decisions when we could lead from the front? And, you know, one of their...
Isn't that where ideas go to die, too, is in PAGs sometimes?
It's getting better, but yeah, that is true. And so, you know, one of their ideal outcomes is to become a model nationwide for how you can, at a local level, require more of your members to go beyond just the basic ethics that in most instances, I know you like Rob Hahn, and I think you guys even talked about it. You know, most of the stuff's already in law. So one of the things we charge them with is look and see where your ethics overlaps with law. And now go beyond that. Don't replicate it. And in that case, you know, they've been struggling to get like state level changes as kind of a progressive thinking local. And so they're thinking if we can do this and build it out and then go to the state, and instead of encouraging them to consider it, they can go and say, here's the template for how you do that.
Oh, that's awesome. Love
so,
it.
So that's kind
that's
of
good
next
work.
Level. That's very aspirational,
that's good
very
work.
Big, but it's cool. Yeah. And they're an organization that when you go in and you see them just like yours, like we can do things like this with them. There are other organizations where it's like, let's shore up our baseline here. Let's figure out what your core services are first.
How do those conversations go? Like when you're walking into somewhere that's maybe not as progressive, an organization that's not willing to push those boundaries. As a facilitator, you want them to grow and stretch. How do you make that happen?
Well, a lot of times it's saying, let's get your foundations in place so that we can get you where you want to go in 5 years. Because ultimately, when we're talking in terms of that long-term strategy, I like five-year horizons because that's far enough away that I'm working towards something, but it's not so far that I lose sight of it. You know, 10 years to me, I just want to be here. You know?
Like,
I want to do my best to set up for success.
So far, but a little higher than that for you, Clint.
5 years at a time.
Right.
So when you're working with them, you get them on that place where you can get them to start to restructure their organization and be thoughtful about what their focus is. And really, and when I'm doing strategic planning, a lot of it is, let's get to your purpose. That's where we start. We don't know mission and vision statements. It's like, what is your purpose? Why do you exist? Let's answer that.
Yep.
From there, what are your core services or core competencies? You know, no more than three of those, and let's focus on doing those things really, really well.
Right.
Instead of being all things to everyone.
How nuanced is that? I mean, associations are sort of what they are, right?
Yeah.
Our lines of business are pretty similar across the board, but like, where are you seeing some kind of competency that's just uber creative and different?
I mean, you guys are on the, I would say this if I wasn't just sitting across from you. I brag about you all the time.
I clearly paid you to do this podcast.
Yeah, for sure. What, really? Wait. By the minute?
Yeah, no. It's not happening.
it's looking at it and starting to say, you know, where do we go from here and building on that. And I think that there's a way to do that that ultimately, you know, benefits everybody.
So put on your strategic thinking facilitator hat for a minute.
Sure.
Don't facilitate in associations, but talk to my members about how they should be strategic thinking in their business. What kind of planning, like what tactics can they leverage that you use with the organization?
Ultimately, I've sat down and I've run this same process with similar documents with some of my brokerage friends.
Sure.
And said, you know, starting with the purpose statement of why do you do what you do?
Yeah. Get right on why you do what you do.
Yeah. It's the whole Simon Sinek thing, right?
Yeah.
So yep. Start with why.
Yep.
And it's amazing how often they're challenged by that. And what happens even when I'm facilitating association or MLS, you know, strategic plans is they're really good at the day-to-day details.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, and sometimes they're good at the 30,000 foot. But when you get to the kind of 10 to 15,000 where it's that linkage between your day-to-day and where you want to go long-term is where kind of the agents and brokers struggle because that's not where they live their every day, right?
Yeah. Like and to be fair, I mean, the job is hard, right? It's so transactionally focused that I think thinking that long game, it's tricky because if they get their eye off that transaction ball for even a minute, mm-hmm. things can drop and that's a problem.
But it's the same thing. I mean,
if
you can figure out your purpose and why you're doing this and what you think you're really good at, and that's kind of the next level of that idea of core services, you can look at yourself and say, what are my core competencies as an agent or a broker? And then start to focus on that. Because again, just like we are in the association world, we run around like these schizophrenic cats trying to be all things to everyone. And ultimately, it degrades our ability to be focused and provide a high level of service. And so I would say the same things.
Yeah.
And then even from there, you know, if you want to get a little more existential, but what are your principles? Like, what's your true north? What are you gonna do in your day to day that you're comfortable with? And what are you not gonna do? Because you have to get to a point, especially as you get further into your career, where you have to be comfortable firing your clients from time to time, right?
Right.
But if you know where you're gonna go and where you're not gonna go, that gets a lot easier because it's not just in the moment, like I don't like this person, they're a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
That's it. But now you're saying they're outside of my principles, like what feels good to me and what I wanted to do and accomplish in my business.
Right.
And so this is no longer healthy for me. It's probably not good for them. And I need to spend my energy on someone else that's mm-hmm. reflective of these principles. So I think there's value to that. And it's just a simple exercise of, you know, instead of just sitting down and writing out your annual business plan,
mm-hmm.
integrate some of those longer term kind of thoughts. And it's really simple as, you know, what do I want to be when I grow up?
Yeah.
And how am I going to do it? And what's most important to me?
Yeah. I think the principles, especially, I had a little bit of a conversation about that with Blake Garrett, the CEO of Asable Agent, who talked about the way that he's carrying his principles throughout his organization as a CEO. But even in your personal life, you need to understand what you stand for. And if those boundaries start to be pushed, I know it's hard when you're chasing that transaction and chasing that business, but there are things that are not good for you long term, even if they feel great in the short term. Being really clear on who you are and why you do what you do is such a great takeaway.
For me, I mentioned the idea of a purpose statement and the core competencies or core services.
Sure.
When you link those two together, you can create a value statement.
Mm.
And now that value statement is something that is something that can be shared not only for yourself to provide that, but it also helps to explain your value proposition to clients when you're sitting down with them.
Yeah.
Right? And you've got to win the deal. And they're like, well, why are you different? Well,
here's my
purpose and here are my core competencies. And I'm ultra focused on that and getting you to the end of the transaction.
Oh, I love it. So, I can't wait to hear listeners' principles and all their vision statements.
And it seems like gobbledygook, right?
It's not though. No. This strategic thinking is my jam. So this is cool, but it's good for entrepreneurs too. It's good to take that kind of focus and be really deliberate about it in their business, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
So you guys work a lot in consolidation in the industry.
Yeah.
What's cooking? What are you seeing there? Is there more talk, less talk?
You know, it's interesting because if you went by the headlines, I think you would say, well, there's less, you know, of that happening. Mostly what we've seen recently has not always been the most flattering part of the consolidation. It's kind of the sausage is being made on the other side of all the excitement of a new something.
Yeah, transitions are not easy, right?
They're Change not, sucks. You know? Yeah, they do. But there's a lot of momentum out there. And we've been looking at overall numbers, and there's a couple of main databases out there that have the Realtor Association stuff and the MLS stuff.
Yeah.
And we've been working to consolidate that, put it into a single database, and then update it.
Yeah.
Which, as you know from working in the data world, is
very challenging.
It seems so easy. You just put it all together, cleaning it up. And so what we found is that we're down to in our database, and we're fairly aggressive about. We've heard about consolidations that are occurring, and so we're already kind of working towards that.
Sure.
But we're at 585, with 101 of those being regional MLSs. In other words, they serve more than one market, or in some cases, they have multiple stakeholders.
And so put that in context for listeners. How different is that from 5 years ago, even?
Yeah, I don't have the historic data. And that's the problem. It's funny. There are these many entities out there, so we should surely know exactly how many of them there are or aren't. And then when you get into these databases, they've got, it's like your member database where there are people in there and you're like, oh my, they haven't been with us for a while.
Is the consolidation that's happening only in the bright MLS scenario of mega to mega?
No.
Or are you seeing a lot of small, mid-size starting to say, we got to team up if we're going to survive?
Yeah, there's some of that. I think where I'm seeing more of it is the thing that makes most sense for me when we're working with folks is to say, do you have a naturally occurring market area that's starting to overlap with each other? In other words, are the clients taking you outside of your typical market area because of the way that the market's developing, or people are moving into your area from, and not that you would know anything about this, metropolitan area that's bleeding over.
We've got no growth in Austin, Texas.
So we're seeing a lot of it there. And so under those circumstances, a lot of what we're seeing are these larger entities, what we would call a mega MLS, starting to bleed over with either a medium-sized or what we would call a smaller metro area where there's, again, the natural market area. So it's not necessarily the groupings of similar types coming together, but rather their markets are similar and overlapped, and they may be different types of entities.
Are you seeing much association consolidation? Everybody thinks immediately of MLS mergers, but there are lots of associations that could leverage their power together too if done right.
There's a big association mergers going through now in Arizona, two very significant entities that have had talks for years and years and years, and now it's happened. What I'm seeing is kind of like some of these ghost mergers almost, where the MLSs have gone through, the associations have either gone out and understand that, we do have value outside of the MLS.
Yeah.
Now, how do we add to that value by partnering up with someone?
Sure.
Or that maybe they are struggling with, we don't have that MLS. We're not sure about how we add value, what our focus is. And so maybe it's time for us to start thinking about partnering.
Yeah.
Or the financial challenges. I mean, they're real. They're not, something that you can't overcome.
Yeah.
But the MLS, in a lot of places, associations leverage the need for the everyday members' use of that to pay for association services that aren't paid for directly because people aren't valuing them, because in many instances they haven't delivered the value.
Or they were so distracted by trying to communicate the thing that the agent needs every day in the MLS that they're not able to be deliberate about communicating about the association.
100%.
I mean, I know at ABOR, part of our focus in really deliberately managing separately our MLS from our association is to say, hey, this is actually what the association does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like wow, who knew that all of those things were happening? Because you're overwhelmed trying to communicate all the things that you want to communicate to people who don't have long to listen because they're busy.
Oh, yeah. And, at the end of the day, I mean, there's a lot of what you do in the association world that is really valuable and highly impactful at a community scale, which is the idea of an association, right?
Yeah.
But at an individual scale, you don't see it every day necessarily.
Sure.
But if it weren't there, if in 5 years there wasn't an entity like yours working on some of your growth issues, then that goes down a road and a path that's not going to have a real estate-centric view to it or a community perspective on what it means to have housing to support the employers that you want.
Yeah.
And so those things are at a macro scale, right? And you can't just see it every day.
Yeah. So T360 has added, you're adding a new line of business. You're going to start working in executive search.
Correct,
which I think is interesting as a new CEO. Obviously, I've just gone through that transition.
So isn't it fun?
I've got my own feelings about that. No, mine's been smooth and awesome, and I'm lucky to be with the team I'm with.
Yeah.
But I see the change that's coming in our industry, and it just by virtue of the fact that people have been in positions for a very long time, there are lots of retirements coming in the next few years. What do you think the next round of leadership looks like? What would be good for our industry in some of these transitions?
Yeah, and I think when we're talking about this, we are talking about it in context of the industry as a whole, whether it's the association, the MLS, brokerage.
All of them. I mean, it's stunning. Stefan wrote about it in his trends report 2 years ago, and it was really profound because it's going to make a difference.
I'm a recovering sociology nerd, and maybe I haven't gotten over it yet. So I love demographics. And you just look at the shift from a baby boomer generation to now the millennials. And I'm an X, so I'm just like this bridge generation.
Oh, you're the trough in the middle.
Yeah, like I just figured out how to, you know, acclimate to the way baby boomers do it. And now they're telling me, well, now it's on to the millennials. And no worries about how you might work or see this world. But it's an interesting thing. I mean, the baby boomers have held leadership positions for 3 decades.
Right.
Unprecedented in the history of this planet. And so that's a long-standing view on how things should be done.
Right.
Now we've got this whole new generation that's coming in with a different purview of what it looks like. And ultimately, I'm seeing great young leaders that are ascending. I was personally a part of, I've been former association executive, part of the people that started up the AEYPN group. And that was to help the younger, because the association executives are actually older than the average realtor.
Yeah.
And so it was that same thing. And so we came in with this group, and I'm seeing some of them that are doing amazing things. You know, there's like a Tessa Holtz who's up now running Long Island. And you've got folks that are actually doing work for NAR and engaged and involved there. And, you know, so there's so many bright young people that I think the leadership capabilities and the approach is going to be really good. And part of that is, I think, because many of those are taking over in a way, understanding that it's not about me and my generation and how we do it, but rather about those who are coming behind.
Right.
And so you're almost forced into this leadership idea and vision and how to do things beyond yourself. And I think that's a cool thing.
What are the most important competencies as you think about how our industry is changing and you draw the right leader for tomorrow, demographics aside, but who is that person in terms of their strengths?
I want someone who's competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get people who are not competitive. Like, why do you get out of bed? Like, what's your deal? I don't get you. You know, it's like,
look at you.
That or people who drive across country without music. Like, these are people I don't get.
These are not your people.
Yeah, I want someone who's competitive because it's not going to be easy. And so you've got to want to get better every day, and you've got to want to learn from your failures as much as your successes and keep going after that. For me, organizational culture shifts don't occur in 1 or 2 years. I know it's my work that I do with organizations where I'm trying to set them up for success, I'm telling them you've got a 3 to 5 year transition.
Yeah.
And the 3 is if you're highly successful. Most likely it's 5+ years.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to do that heavy lifting, like, you want to know that I'm committed to this for the next 5 years, because it's not about the next 2. It's the next 2 that actually get us to the next 3 and 4 and 5, where we can fully actuate this thing and we can get beyond having a strategic focus and, you know, processes that are documented and repeatable and consistent outcomes, to start now building this mutual passion amongst yourself and your organization.
Right.
And then even further from there, if you have like this idea of, we have a shared identity that we created together, like, to me, that's organizational culture. And that doesn't happen.
You are like so jazzed up.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, competition, go.
Yeah. And beyond that, I mean, I want someone who's a quick learner, and I want someone who's adaptive.
Yeah. I think definitely our members don't understand sometimes the depth of the operations of both an association and an MLS. And certainly when they're combined, there's a lot of learning. There's a big curve. And
when you're doing it right, it is. There are a lot of folks that are just sliding by, and I think that's what's did so much damage, in particular to the association's reputation, is there were a lot of folks that were in roles, and this was in large part because this is what the volunteers wanted, mind you, but they were administrative assistants, and they weren't CEOs. They weren't they weren't setting the, you know, the tone and the vision for the organization. They were responding to the volunteers dictating that. And that's great so long as you have great volunteers, but it's hard to maintain great volunteers all the time, and so organizations then go up and down.
Now you're kind of talking some of the governance challenges associated with how associations and MLSs operate. I know ABOR's made significant strides in evolving the way that we govern, evolving the way that we engage members directly, and we're unique in that in some ways, but what are you seeing from other people who are trying to change that game a little bit?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest requests that I've been seeing over the last few months is, you know, our established, for the most part, highly functioning MLSs in particular that are saying, we're preparing for the future. We want to assemble a significant growth strategy. And in order to be able to do that, we have to first understand how we operate, how we govern, and also how does that work from a financial component? Because those are a couple of the biggest decisions, you know, especially for association/MLSs, is Are we going to lose control? And are we going to lose relevance? And, oh, yeah, by the way, what about the money?
Right.
And so all that links back into that governance piece. So, yeah, there's a lot of work to shore that up right now. And yeah. I think there's a want now to be a little more innovative and especially so to look outside of, oh, we've got to move away from the association model of purely volunteers to now do we bring in targeted advisors? Do we bring in outside advisors? Mm-hmm. And if so, what do they look like? What's the criteria? And that's a whole new thing of you invite someone from outside of your organization to right. provide guidance for an organization that's fully funded by your members
yeah.
or your subscribers. And so how do you do that in a way that protects the integrity of what the entity is in terms of who the rightful owners are mm. versus what you need to be, and especially so as you're serving consumers. We've got to get outside of ourselves to be able to serve those that aren't, you know, seeing the world from our purview.
When I think about being focused on deliberately managing the MLS versus the association, the place that is most stunningly different is the way in which they should be governed. And it's just by virtue of what they are. You know, an MLS is this marketplace, it's a business, it's a rules and regulations and boundaries and all the things. And associations are community, and you can do things a little slower. You'd still like to be nimble and innovative, but it's about bringing people along with you in those decisions, not just top down making them and, you know, seeing how it works for you.
Well, and the reality is that in my worldview of the way the MLS in particular right now is functioning, you can have two guiding principles in terms of your growth strategy. You can be proactive or you can be reactive.
Yeah.
There's no status quo.
Yeah.
You may
Those
feel
are
like,
the options.
Yeah, I'm status quo. Oh, no, you're just getting in line to be reactive in the next 5 to 6 years at the most.
Just wait till you have a challenge.
Yeah, whereas associations have a little bit more of that opportunity to be status quo. So if you're going to do that, then in some ways you're compelled to start to assemble like a real strategy about how you're going to grow. And so how do you welcome in others without then making your board, like you say, so large in an effort to be representative that it's unable to function?
It's interesting though, because I think we think of the board as the only mechanism for the voice, and that's so not true. The truth is, and I know in my boardroom at least, that board wants to hear from the voice, which is the membership at large, and then try to make really good decisions for them and with them. But I think in a lot of associations and for a long time, if you were that, you know, that precious few that volunteered extensively and served on every committee and did the board, you were the only voice that was heard in terms of decision making at the association.
Yeah.
And I think it's good that that's evolving. I know that that change is hard too for our valued volunteers who have spent a lot of time working in a different kind of set up and in a different environment.
Yeah, I mean, in the MLS world now, where again, let's be honest, it's impacting not only our members' ability to do what they do, but now we're further and further interacting with the consumer. And so if you're not performing and making decisions for the right reasons and with your true director's hat on for the organization and those who you ultimately serve as
That's right.
Versus you're sitting there with your hat on, like, I need to protect my part of the world. And I'm not sitting here with the lens of the MLS. I'm sitting here with the lens of my brokerage.
Right.
That's maybe okay, and it's far less damaging to the community and consumers. Like in the association world, you can kind of, I mean, to me, fiduciary means fiduciary through and through.
Yeah.
But if you do that in the association capacity, the impact that it's going to have at a large scale is much less likely than when we're talking MLS. Like, you're really impacting people's lives at the end of the day. I mean, these people are buying and selling homes, and like, that's the biggest thing that the majority of them are going to do. And so now you're either facilitating that or hampering that. And so when you're making decisions, are you doing it with that in mind or simply how it impacts you? And that's real concerning.
So you guys are all about trends. We're going to leave with a final question.
Sure.
What's the biggest trend happening in brokerage for the agent? Like, what does the individual agent need to know today to be ready for tomorrow?
I think the iBuyer thing is something.
Oh, that thing?
Yeah, that thing. I think it's real. I don't know what it ultimately becomes, but knowing the way the consumer is headed, if we as association and MLSs don't first begin to understand that, mm-hmm. and then second ask if it is even a portion of the portfolio, how is it that we can get in and improve it and interlink with it to make our offerings to members better and to help consumers negotiate and navigate what could be a detrimental model for them if they don't think it through. And not do the whole Zillow thing all over again where we just hate on it and we just reduce it down to something of a us versus them scenario. The reality is it's for all the consumers. If you want to play ball with the consumers, you need to look at the full spectrum. Right. I think brokerages should be doing the same thing. You know, how do we leverage that? What do we do to position against that? Mm-hmm. I think it's real, and whether it ultimately becomes, you know, 60% of the market or anything like that, I don't know. But I think the fact that we don't know is exactly the reason to start to participate with it now.
So iBuyer is a piece of the pie. Everybody has to pay attention to it, and they need to figure out how they communicate their value proposition, their competencies, all of those things that we talked about earlier in an effort to say, like, I've got real value. This is an option, yes, but I can make this work for you better.
Yeah, and what's the value proposition that iBuyer is presenting? And even if it's not the iBuyer model itself, it's that there's a lesson to be learned in terms of what the consumer is saying they want.
Yeah.
Now, how do I, under whatever model I choose to pursue, act on that and leverage that for my betterment, my business.
Right. Don't be reactive. Just be aware.
Mm-hmm, yeah. For sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me today.
Well, you're so hard to hang out with.
You know. Thanks, Clint. Hey, team. Let's make this a thing. If you like what you heard today, share this episode on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and tag me at M. Chenevere. That's E.M. Chenevere. You can also subscribe to Scratch That on SoundCloud and iTunes. And grab show notes at abor.com/scratchthat. Thanks for joining me today. Now let's go get some stuff done out there.